I'll be talking about using hepatitis C virus and herpes simplex virus 2 to assess trends in HIV among injecting drug users. I'd like to acknowledge NIDA's support and report that there are no conflicts of interest. Actually, I would like to see some presentation that does have a conflict of interest here. I mean, I'd like to see where you can get some money to create a conflict of interest other than because I don't think extra money would create bias, but it wouldn't. I'd be willing to try it. Injecting drug users are at risk for HIV through both sharing injection equipment and unsafe sex. There's evidence that sexual transmission becomes more important when you have good access to sterile injection equipment from Stephanie's studies in Baltimore and Alex's studies in San Francisco. However, it's quite difficult to try to tease out injection risk versus sexual risk for HIV transmission. First, it's difficult to identify new HIV infections. Cohort studies tend to be expensive and non-representative. You know, even if the cohort starts out representative, it becomes more and more non-representative over time as you get differential retention. The STARS BED testing for identifying recent infections is relatively good, but it requires clinical data. You need to be able to distinguish people who've been infected for a long time and are reaching severe levels of HIV immunosuppression or are receiving antiretroviral treatment from new infections. And often you don't have enough N of new injectors for any sort of meaningful new infections for meaningful statistical analyses. So we've been looking at hepatitis C and herpes 2 as ways of tracking and risk among injecting drug users. Hepatitis C is transmitted almost exclusively through blood-to-blood contact. It's a very good biomarker for injection risk behavior. In contrast, herpes simplex virus 2 is transmitted sexually, and it can be seen as a very good biomarker for sexual risk behavior. Herpes is actually more than just a biomarker. It increases susceptibility to HIV infection. The two meta-analyses indicate that it increases susceptibility by a factor of 2 to 3 by creating portals for HIV entry. Herpes is also believed to increase the transmissibility of HIV by increasing HIV viral shedding. The data I'll be presenting comes from our risk factor study. Subjects are recruited from the drug detoxification program at Beth Israel Medical Center. It's a citywide program admitting approximately 7,000 patients per year. We've been studying 300 to 600 of these per year. We give them a structured interview and an HIV test. We have done STARS testing to estimate HIV incidence among these subjects. This is a graph showing the increase of syringe exchange in New York City from the early 1990s to about 2000. The legends on the graph have somehow disappeared. But the number of syringes exchanged went from about 250,000 per year to about 3 million per year during this time period from the mid-1990s to the early 2000s. At the same time that we dramatically increased the number of syringes being exchanged, we saw a dramatic drop in HIV incidence from about 4 per 100 person years at risk to under 1 per 100 person years at risk, so that there was a real transformation of our epidemic when we did syringe exchange on a big scale in New York. I'll be presenting data on about 400 subjects recruited through 2005-2007, 83% male, 22% white, 55% Hispanic, 23% African American, with a mean age of 39 years. We did HIV testing, hepatitis C testing, and herpes testing on all of these subjects. HIV was 19% prevalence, hepatitis C 72% prevalence, and herpes 49% prevalence. You'll note that there are very little differences by gender, race, ethnicity, or hepatitis C, there was an age difference. There were strong differences by gender, race, ethnicity, as well as age for HIV and for herpes 2. And there's strong parallels between the HIV prevalence pattern with higher prevalence among females and the herpes, which also had higher prevalence among females, higher prevalence of HIV among African Americans, and higher prevalence of herpes among African Americans. Next, we broke down the subjects, or divided the subjects, into two groups. Those who began injecting before 1995, who had spent part of their injecting career in before we had large-scale syringe exchange, and those who began injecting in 1995 or later, who had spent their entire injecting career in an environment with relatively good access to clean syringes. For the earlier injectors, there was a strong relationship between hepatitis and HIV, an odds ratio of almost 11, where for the later injectors, those who began injecting after syringe exchange expanded, there was no relationship between hepatitis C and HIV. In contrast, for the people who began injecting before large-scale syringe exchange, there was not a significant relationship between herpes and HIV, but there was a very strong relationship, an odds ratio of almost 18, between herpes and HIV. So that we, in these two groups, divided by when they began injecting, we see a reversal of the relationship between HCV and HIV and herpes and HIV. We, however, among these 400 or 397 IDUs, we had only 11 HIV seropositives. So we went back to the freezer and we thawed some samples and tested them for HCV and herpes. These were 20 HIV positive IDUs. Among these 20 HIV positive IDUs who began injecting in 1995 or later, 45% were HCV positive, no different from the 56% HCV positive we had among our HIV negative IDUs. However, 90% of these 20 HIV positives were herpes positive, compared to only 36% among the HIV negative IDUs. 35% of them were reported male with male sexual behavior versus only 5% among our HIV negative IDUs. And of these 20 HIV positive IDUs who began injecting in 1995 or later, all 20 of them had indicators of high sexual risk. They were either herpes positive or reported MSM behavior. So that in 20 IDUs who began injecting after 1995 and were HIV positive, all of them had an indication of high sexual risk. Okay. The prevalence of HIV among people who began injecting after expansion of syringe exchange is 6%. That's greatly reduced from the 30-40% prior to expansion of syringe exchange, but it's obviously still of concern. Among injectors who were HIV positive and began injecting after syringe exchange, HIV is not associated with hepatitis C, our biomarker for injection risk. It is strongly associated with indicators of high sexual risk, either herpes or MSM behavior. We need to believe that we need to do research and interventions to address herpes-facilitated HIV transmission among both our non-injecting drug users, where herpes is quite prevalent also, as well as our injecting drug users. In particular, we need interventions to address women at risk. Herpes among female IDUs in New York, 85% are seropositive for herpes. Among African Americans, 67% are herpes seropositive. Unfortunately, there have been a couple studies recently of suppressive therapy for herpes that showed it did not reduce HIV acquisition. There's another study by Connie Kellum. So that while there's good evidence that herpes does facilitate HIV acquisition, standard suppressive therapy for herpes infection does not protect against HIV acquisition, and we're going to have to come up with new interventions. We believe that we should be tracking herpes and HIV among both injecting drug users and non-injecting drug users. This data clearly indicates that in New York we have seen a shift from injecting to sexual-related transmission. Doing a herpes test among HIV positives is a relatively simple methodological procedure. You could do it at the same time you were doing the HIV testing. This would be important for allocation of prevention and treatment resources. It would be interesting to check other cities such as Baltimore and San Francisco to see if herpes is emerging as a factor associated with recent HIV infections. These cities, as well as New York, have histories of high HIV prevalence among injecting drug users. All three cities have good access to sterile syringes, but high levels of unsafe sex among drug users and potentially have high HSV prevalence. To summarize, we do need to have new strategies for reducing sexual transmission among non-injecting and injecting drug users. It's unlikely that any single strategy or program is going to be sufficient. Rather, we'll probably need to develop multiple new interventions. Thank you.
Don, you ran 10 seconds over. I'm gonna have to keep it. The next speaker is Karen Tolman.